Welcome to This is Palestine. I'm Deanna Butu.
We've all seen it. Our social media posts are suddenly removed, many posts throttled, or our posts go unseen completely. In some cases, entire accounts are shut down. Yet despite Meta censorship, Palestinians have found their way through social media to speak, resist, and be heard. In this episode of This is Palestine, I speak with one of my favorite creators, Adnan Bark, who jokingly describes himself in his Instagram page as, quote, the only democracy in the Middle East, and who, in his own words, quote, thrives in chaos. Adnan is a Palestinian digital creator in his 20s from the old city of Jerusalem. He shares content on social media, mainly Instagram, and is known for his unique perspective on Palestine's cultural and political landscape, using humor and sarcasm to shed light on the absurd reality of life under occupation in Palestine. In our conversation, Adnan takes us to the moments that shaped his voice, his early teenage years when locked out of his school inside Al-Aqsa Mosque, to building an online platform where humor becomes a coping mechanism of the surreal daily reality under Israeli checkpoints. This is Dark Humor in the Digital Space, Adnan Bark on life and laughter under Israeli occupation. Welcome to This is Palestine. I'm Deanna Butu.
Adnan, welcome.
Anna,
I can't believe that I'm speaking to the only democracy in the Middle East.
Alhamdulillah, that's me. I'm very humbled. Thank you so much.
So, you know, and then the reason I was saying that I wanted to speak to you is because I love the way that you combine storytelling and digital creation with humor. Can you tell us a little bit more about how you started on this path?
To be honest, it was all very random. Since I started studying in Bethlehem University, and I studied English literature and journalism, and while studying literature, we were introduced to psychological theories like Freud and all this squad. Then we were introduced to defense mechanisms. Then we were introduced to normalization. When you normalize something abnormal just to make your day feel normal. So as soon as, as soon as I learned about this defense mechanism, I felt like things went wrong for me because I started seeing the abnormalities around us and I was like, shit, we're normalizing so many abnormalities. So I started just making fun of this on my Instagram story and like to show how everywhere is like, you know, like this wall is not normal. The checkpoints that I cross every day from Bethlehem to Jerusalem should not be normal. Just to make jokes for my friends about them. So I did daily stories on checkpoints because it was messy, always messy. And then my friends started to engage, to feel like they are really seeing what is unseen, which is unseen mentally. It's there in our faces, but mentally it's blocked.
But you use a lot of sarcasm in your, which, you know, is a great tool because it connects with people, yeah. But you use a lot of it. And why sarcasm?
Listen, I don't know. I'm just, we as Palestinians, we are like sometimes misrepresented in the media in terms of how much intense and dramatic they show us. While in fact, when you are on the ground, you see how much people like are kind of silly and goofy because, I mean, they normalized the abnormalities. They normalized this disgusting life that we are living under apartheid and colonialism. And the easiest way to make your day normal is just to laugh about it sometimes. So my school was inside Al-Aqsa Mosque, my high school. I was there from the 7th grade till the Tawjihi, the high school. And I was with my friends, of course. We were the first generation to be met with the settler movements that they want to break into Al-Aqsa Mosque and take over it. So they used to close all the gates of Al-Aqsa Mosque in the morning hours, and they would prevent us as students to access our school inside Al-Aqsa Mosque and to prevent people to pray inside Al-Aqsa Mosque. So we would wait on the gates. People would fight back. So the Israeli occupation would, you know, of course, push back against us and start with its stupid violence. But I was a teenager, my friends also were teenagers. So when we see our school is closed and the soldiers are beating everyone, it was fun, you know? It was absolutely fun in the beginning because, like, there is no school, the gates are closed, and you see the teacher that you hate is being beaten by one of the soldiers. You're like, yeah! Like, it was satisfying at the beginning. But then slowly, slowly, I remember how it outgrew us all, like from those funny moments, from like throwing falafel on the faces of the soldiers and just running in the alleys of the old city away from the soldiers before they catch us. It took then a very dark turn because we started seeing our classmates really being hit severely by the soldiers. I saw others being like choking on the gas of the soldiers, and another one who was beaten by a police officer for no reason. So he, as a normal reaction, he hit him back on his face, and he was arrested and taken for years in prison. And now he works in a garage fixing cars. So one slap took his life to a whole different, let's say, universe, because of this coercive environment that was built and created by Israel. So I think something from that phase stayed with me until today, because they are part of every phase of our life and we just want to live. So we outlive their presence. You feel like they are just some random force lingering around you while you are just continuing with living. And I think, of course, humor comes as a coping mechanism. I mean, I'm the kind of in everything, not only in the political perspective, it's just even in my personal issues, I always just laugh it away because it's the easiest way.
You know, it's funny because as you're speaking, pardon me, I'm remembering my late father, who always used to say to me, just, pretend that they don't exist. Like, continue your life as though they don't exist and just keep going and ignore, ignore, ignore. And what you've done is kind of ignore, but then you've also turned it on its head and turned it into something that's in a way very funny, where we can look at these quite horrendous situations and in a way find a little bit of humor in them. How do you find this? Where do you find the strength to be able to do this?
To be honest, the whole premise of the Jewish state is funny. Like the premise of like its core of the onion is like makes no sense, because all the democracies around us in the West and whatever areas, they say they support Israel because it's democratic, while in fact Israel's premise is, says that it's given for them by God. It contradicts the leftist democratic values in terms of how are you supporting a religious fanatic perspective while you are a liberal, non-religious, separate religion from politics type of person, speaking of the Western culture? And that's why, like, the premise of this whole place is very random. And even settlers are like so unhinged, you know? Like, really, like when you see Americans and they come here as if they are the masters of this place, and it's funny, like when you see them losing it and how they are just practicing their, you know, Israel-given privilege. I don't want to say God-given privilege because too much responsibility on God, I feel bad for him. So let's say, like, this man-made privilege, like, it's just so random and it's so funny to spectate. And yet it's very annoying how, when it comes to Israel, anything that is supposed to be becomes something else, like the international law, for example. Now, like while speaking to you now, Belgium says it will not arrest Netanyahu, while the ICC has an official ticket of arrest. And like yesterday, he was flying in the airspace of France while he's legally is not supposed to. So I feel like when it comes to Israel, you cannot take things seriously. And that's my mechanism as well. If the world is treating us in this way, I would gladly treat them back in this way. I will not take anyone seriously, from the biggest Israeli figure to its like smallest one, in addition to all the Western powers who are speaking about human rights and humanity in general. So
And, I think you see one of the things I like about what you do is that it's not just a question of humor, but you turn things on its head, and so one of the things that I would like to ask you about is like, what are some of the misconceptions that you think or that you see people carry, and how is it that you're countering them?
To be honest, the misconceptions like vary because they have so many layers. Like I will sound now like Edward Said. We are all infected by Edward Said with his Orientalism theory. But his Orientalism makes sense because you have the big umbrella of the stereotypical image about the Middle East as Middle East, and then you have the, let's say, the micro lens on Palestine that is fed by a multi-billion propaganda machine funded by the Israeli and Zionist lobbies. And when you look at those stereotypical images, I never really cared about them since I live in Palestine. I'm not encountering so many strangers like Palestinians in diaspora. So I did not suffer directly from those stereotypical images. But I had the experience of seeing people unlearning as soon as they arrived to Palestine, like foreign friends, Americans, Europeans. When they come here, they always tell me this notion that, oh, it's not like how we expected, or like Palestinians are like the best discovery that we've ever made. I'm like, okay, what is the essence of this? What are the roots of this? And their commentary opened my eyes to look deeper into this matter, and especially after being introduced to Orientalism and other post-colonial theories, and then engaging with the diaspora, because me as a Palestinian on the ground in Jerusalem, I did not understand what diaspora is until my days of university. Like, even when someone tells me that, oh, I'm American Palestinian, I'm like, what does that even mean? Like, usually I thought like they are just Americans who can speak Arabic, you know, like on the level of our society. They are very, like detached because of our surroundings. And I started learning about misconceptions by like my friend's experience in diaspora. Like how my friend Yazan, he's American Palestinian, and he was always asked by other students about where is his camel. Like
Oh
literally.
God. Yeah, I had that actually growing up.
I believe that reflecting the real authentic experience on the ground is the best way to encounter such misconceptions and stereotypical images. And that's why my content is always very raw and on the ground, because I want to show how things they are. Because I'm thankfully, since my day one on social media, I was not stained, let's say, by the perfect victim framing that was created by Western platforms to allow us to speak. Like, I used to show things as is, to show Palestinians with their flaws, with their pros and cons, like things as is, because we are, as a society, as Palestinians, who went through over 70 years of oppression and colonialism, and how we are able to have such intellectual elites and successful people, it makes no sense. We are supposed to be now stupid, headless gangs who are drinking and just drowning with needles in our hands. But look at us, I mean, we are such a success story.
Do you have a process? Like, is there a way that you think through from beginning to end of what it is that you're going to make?
To be honest, I've never had a process, and that's the issue of me. I feel like even if when I work on something, like I never write a script, because I believe that reflecting the authentic experience comes from spontaneous documentation, and that's why I keep it spontaneous. And I believe in the uniqueness of every individual Palestinian story, because when you speak to Zionist Israelis, there's always a checklist of what their arguments is, literally always the same. But I dare any person in the world to just find any similarity of like the type of life of each Palestinian individually. Okay, it's the same occupation, same oppression, but each one of us has the unique story of the oppression, which Zionists do not have, of course. And that's why I always focus on Jerusalem, since I'm a Jerusalemite. And they see our unique experience in Jerusalem, but still, there are like some friends of mine from South Africa. When they came to Palestine, they told me a very interesting notion about their experience in Palestine. They told us that apartheid here within the Israeli state, the Israeli colonial state, of course, they told us that apartheid here is very sophisticated. They created the type of Palestinians who equal Israelis in small portions, and they created other type of Palestinians who are a little bit less than Israelis, like us in Jerusalem, who have freedom of movement, for example, who have national insurance and can live almost a good life, except if we cannot vote, for example, except that we are not Israeli citizens, except that we live in ghettos of the East Jerusalem areas, while in fact we pay the same taxes. And you have the other type of Palestinians who are trapped inside the wall in the West Bank, and other type of Palestinians who are inside concentration camp of Gaza.
We've become so attuned to this, and so we've normalized all of this. We've normalized the fear, we've normalized anxiety, we've normalized the absurdity, and you haven't, which is what makes it so refreshing for people. What about reactions from around the world? Do you get a lot of reactions from people from different audiences?
I think people just, or the world in general, can be united by comedy. Comedy is indeed like such an amazing bridge between any two human groups, let's say. And all of the reactions come like from many different people from the world. Like literally, I have followers from each continent, and it's so random. And they all connect with me and with my content as if they live with the same experience. Because as I told you, like the occupation is not a political experience, it's a human experience. And what we are experiencing can be easily translated into human language to other people, and they can just see themselves in our spot. And that's why I see, I mean, for me, it is indeed, I'm just a young man from Palestine who just wants to find a way to live the best type of life under the worst conditions. And this clash of, you know, trying to balance your own personal life while everything is falling apart has been always interesting for people. But after the genocide of Gaza, things took a very dark turn for everyone. That's why, like, even there's no comedy that can, let's say, echo the horror of genocide. And that's why since then I've been like every other Palestinian, not in the right place, mentally or like content-wise.
No, nobody is. And one of the things that I've been appreciating about you is that you still continue to go after the people who are trying to glorify genocide and who have become the genocide apologists. But again, always using like kind of the humorous way, or just honing in on some of the absurdities of it, because it's so easy for them to just become genocide apologists, and yet, you're continuing to push back. So I appreciate that. Are there some apologists that you see more than others, or some videos that kind of get you more than the others?
To be honest, after the genocide and everything, there is like insane Israeli crackdown on Palestinian activists and journalists, especially inside the Green Line. And when we say the Green Line, it's, you know, like the Israeli territories that are occupied by the Israeli state. Since I feel like it's a big jargon, I always try to explain it for the audience. And I think we need to normalize this word inside the Green Line. It's better to refer to things like that. Anyway. So many of my friends were imprisoned only just choosing the wrong words, literally. And I was like, shit, I mean, how can I survive this? Especially that in investigations and all the other type of inquiries, the Israeli state is interpretation, like they offer interpretations of your words in a way that makes them as if they are master class in Arabic and grammar. While public signs have typos in Arabic, like now you are doing literature over my posts on social media. Anyways, so I was like the best way to just showcase the situation without harming myself is by adopting the Israeli narrative through showing my followers the Israeli content without any commentary. Because I was like, this is the situation and this is what I find on my TikTok algorithm. And it went crazy. It went crazy. Those people are insane. I swear we reached a level. We as Palestinians have no need to advocate or just to say anything. We just need to bring a screen and content of the Israeli soldiers and creators and just show it one by one. It's insane. Wow, I
It is.
mean, it's It's my guilty pleasure. It's terrible. I enjoy it. That's the issue. While it's calling for my genocide, it's normalizing the killing of my people, and it calls us terrorists, and they are making fun of our dead babies. But
Yeah.
still, the amount of unhinged, it feels like it makes me wonder if the Holocaust happened in modern era, what would the Nazi content be? I'm very curious. I think this is something that we can maybe do a study about.
I'm sure it would have probably been somewhat similar. I think your algorithm is probably the same as my algorithm because it can't figure out where you and I live. Me being in Haifa, you being in Jerusalem, it can't figure out whether you are into this genocidal stuff or whether you're not into the genocidal stuff. So for me, every time I'm going through TikTok or Instagram, like any of the reels, it's soldiers dancing, really bad dances. The of course, as you put it, the making fun of the war crimes and making light of the war crimes, where, by the way, you never see Palestinians. You just see how tough and how strong they are and their prowess and their strength. When you do see Palestinians, it's in these very, humiliating, like we've defeated them positions. And there's something both obviously very disturbing about it. Obviously. And then at the same time, as you put it, there's something that's like they're living in their own bubble where they think that this is kind of cool, where they think
Not
that this
only
is
cool,
cool.
it's beyond. I mean, I think even they are aware of this because there is this specific type of language that is now being streamed in the Israeli mainstream media of calling us as human animals and Amalek, Maalek, whatever it's
Yeah,
called. It's a
the
reference
animals.
for something biblical that is so crazy. And that's why for them, now it's a dead Palestinian is the new norm. And it is beyond dancing. I saw videos of like posing over dead bodies and stepping on a skull and taking a picture of it and wearing Palestinian women lingerie.
Yeah,
Well, Diana, I
obsessed
was
with
like,
that.
when I'm walking in the streets and I see lingerie shops around and I see them like showcasing their products on the like behind the glass, I see Israeli soldiers wearing that type
Yeah.
of stuff. I'm traumatized. Like
Yeah.
lingerie, what is supposed to be sexy and what is supposed to be the peak of intimacy between any couple, let's say, or
And
whatever,
private, and
and
private.
private, I see it now as a tool of terror, really.
And yet, I know that that your account, as much as it's gotten a lot of reach, has also been fa facing some suppression. Can you talk a little bit about that and censorship?
Well, it's we're so bored of this stupid meta algorithms because, listen, I mean, I would definitely cry about this if we were now like a year back in time, you know. I will let you later know why, but still, the issue with meta is like, for example, for a year and a half, I'm stuck on the same followers count. It never got higher or lower. While I get daily followers and I get millions of views. And for example, sometimes some stories just disappear and other content gets blocked. On the day of the 7th of October, when things went crazy, I wanted to go live to just showcase the rockets and the crazy situation around me. I was blocked on the spot from going live. And it feels like they have this emergency list when things go wrong. Specific accounts will be, you know, limited on the spot
Yeah.
because of our experience in 2021 with Sharjah Rah. I'm sure that there is some kind of blacklist for whoever was active. I think it was activated on that day, but to be honest, I try to play on the algorithm. Like when I write Gaza, I put the at, not the a, for example. And when I write Israel, I write it with Z, not with S. You have just to play around the words sometime. But to be honest, yeah, if it was a year ago, I would definitely be like angry and stuff. But now I feel like even social media, we did a great job as Palestinians to expose the occupation and its crimes.
I'm one of the very few privileged people who's had the opportunity to live in Jerusalem, live in 48, inside the Green Line, as you called it, also live in Ramallah, and I also lived in Gaza. And but that's a totally unusual experience. And so I have friends in all of these places, and most of the people I know don't have friends in all of these places. And yet here you are as somebody who's very active on social media. Undoubtedly, you've created friends in all of these places. So what has that been like for you?
To be honest, I'm jealous now since you were in Gaza before. Like I have this unhidden jealousy towards anyone who had the experience of exploring Gaza. Especially Gaza always felt for us as, young Palestinians, as this fairyland that it's not real, while it's very close, while it's the impossible. But with the social media, to be honest, I have been active about Gaza since 2017 or 18, usually. I always made those posts about it, and I felt like I'm always the only one who talks about Gaza. It was like very annoying how no one sees this terrible place in terms of occupation. Of course, it's amazing as a beautiful city, but it's terrible in terms of conditions. But then, when things went crazy on the 7th of October, of course, we all directed our content to Gaza, and I started following so many Gazans who already follow me, and I saw them growing and becoming an amazing activists, and it was my first time to have like real Gazan friends. But you always feel like you are nothing in their presence because of what they have went through, and when I tell them this, they're like, no, it's you, Allah ya'inak. I mean, God be with you, because you are the one who's living in Jerusalem. We cannot imagine what you are experiencing. I'm like, what? I mean, I'm the one that cannot imagine what you are experiencing. I don't know how I can assist my friends, but what I've done in Gaza with Gazans is how, like, since Gazans feel like the only way they can do anything is just seeking social media and talk about the horrors of their situation. Many of them, do not have the mental capacity to write scripts for the videos or to have the tools of storytelling. So I used to reach out to my friends in Gaza and tell them to describe for me in three lines what they are seeing, what they are feeling, and what they want to tell. And they would send me this, and accordingly, I would write longer scripts according to their feelings and their vision, and send it back to them to make it content. So it was an amazing way to offer support for my friends, which made us closer. And then just we meet in such terrible circumstances. It feels like a waste of amazing potential. Of like I feel like I lost amazing memories that did not exist.
There is such an incredible, powerful energy that can keep people apart, and yet we find these ways to connect with one another, even though, by all accounts, there should be nothing connecting us.
Indeed.
There should be nothing that should be connecting us, and there's so many forces working to separate us, and that you do find these moments.
I mean, we're the most disconnected, yet the most connected. Like literally, because listen, like when you attack someone's identity, by nature, this identity gets boosted, And that's what I see in Jerusalem, like the way they try to erase our existence as Palestinians makes us more national. And makes us more like we want to embrace our identity and our land. And that's what Israel is not understanding.
Thank you for listening to This is Palestine, a podcast brought to you by the Institute for Middle East Understanding. The IMEU is a nonprofit focused on giving you access to untold stories, facts, and expert sources on all things Palestine. For more information, please visit our website at www.imeu.org and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at the IMEU. Please don't forget to subscribe. I'm Deanna Butu. Thanks for listening.